Thank you all for coming to hear about the Green Project Lunchbox Study, which has consumed us for the past 4 years or so. It was funded by an NIH R01, and what's important to note about that is that, to my knowledge, this was the first R01 that specifically requested proposals that focused on communication for dietary behavior change. And so basically when it arrived, we flew out of our doors, the people along my corridor, and said, it has our name on it. Of course, those of you who know that when you write an R01, your chances of it's having your name on it are pretty slim, but we were very fortunate. We have no conflicts that I know of to report. So what this is about is a communication campaign to improve the quality of food that kids bring from home to eat at school. And while we think a lot about school lunch, and a lot of people are focusing deservedly on school lunch, really very little attention is being paid to the food that kids bring from home, when in fact 40% of kids bring their food from home every day. And the overwhelming majority of elementary school children bring at least a snack from home. So this plays an important role in their overall nutrient profiles. And I hit the wrong key. Okay. So as most of you probably know, the diets of children in the U.S. could stand some improvement. Only 1 in 5 are getting the requisite fruits and vegetables a day. 70% of them consume sugar-sweetened beverages every day. About 1/4 of their calories come from snacks, and that adds up to a hefty, roughly 500-plus calories a day, or about 1/3 of their calories a day come from low-nutrient-dense foods. That is not a good picture. Well, we thought about where we were going to put our energy. And as I mentioned, foods from home really are the neglected area of concern when we think about kids and school days. In fact, what the literature shows, and the literature really is very scarce in this area, is that kids who bring their food from home typically have lower nutrient profiles than kids who get school lunches. And by the way, this is true internationally as well. They are less likely to consume milk, fruits, and vegetables, more likely to consume desserts, snacks, and sugar-sweetened beverages, and the food they bring is more energy-dense, so they're getting more calories at a time when we worry about what kids should be taking in and what their body profiles are looking like. So we said, well, okay, if we're going to impact on this, kids have been exposed to nutrition in lots of ways, and they've heard about it. And what can we do that's different? And we really racked our brains on this one. And finally, we came to the idea that kids really care about the environment. It's hot stuff in schools. They're learning a lot about recycling. Families are engaged in this. And so we said, you know what? There are foods that meet the two criteria. They're nutritionally dense and they're good for the environment. So what if we combine the two ideas? And that we really focus on kids as the ambassadors for bringing the message home. And as you can see in this drawing, this was done by a child. We did a lot of preliminary focus group work, and this was a drawing by one of the children in one of the focus groups that really shows that this seemed to resonate with the kids. So from this background of focus group work, we developed a theory-based communication campaign. And for those of you who are into theoretical models, it's here way at the end of the slides, and I'll be happy to show it to you after the presentation. And the end product was to improve the quality of foods that kids bring from home. As I've said, foods that are good for you are good for the environment, and the primary target were kids, but the person they had to influence was their parents and caregivers. This is the design for the campaign. We had to design two separate but equal campaigns. One had the nutrition eco-communication focus. The other one was nutrition only. And then there was also a control group, which I'll mention in just a moment. These are the elements of the campaign, which were identical for the two groups: a curriculum, packing and shopping guides for the parents, newsletters for the parents to remind them about the campaign and to get them to pack things that the kids would like. There was a school-wide poster contest, which was immensely popular, nothing that isn't done in lots of schools, but this was really, it was integrated with the campaign and was very popular. And then there were food demonstrations and tastings. This is an example of what went on in the classroom. There, if you look behind you, there is a graphing exercise going on. And this is one of the workbook pages, which has a graph in which the kids charted for a week the fruits and vegetables that they brought from home to school and then created their own individual graphs. All of the curriculum lessons were integrated with the core component, the Massachusetts Standards in Education for English Language Arts, Reading, Math, and Health. The importance of that, which is really, I can't stress enough, is that it made it much easier for school administration to say yes to participating than they otherwise would, because those of you who have worked in schools know that it's extremely difficult to get your foot in the door. And once your foot is in the door, the easiest answer for the principal and the teachers to say is, we're too busy. This was a great way to get them, to convince them that they really wouldn't be taking time from their regular school day. This was stuff the kids had to learn anyway. It's just that we integrated grade-appropriate nutrition into the curriculum. So it's always a challenge to engage the parents, but they were absolutely integral to the campaign. This is a page out of the packing and shopping guide. And again, the reason we did a packing and shopping guide for them was that the need for one emerged from focus group research with the parents, that what to send to school really is a problem. And we uncovered all the reasons kids reject what they send, both from the parents and from the kids in these focus groups. This is another page which focuses on how you can save money on what you send to school with the kids. And we also did monthly newsletters, because it's important to continue to give injections of information all along to remind the parents that this is going on and they have an important role in it. And this is one of the pages from the Great Taste, Less Waste Gazette. And here's another one, very timely, focused on the events of the month. This one's the Valentine's Day one, and things that kids really like to eat. And pizza, of course, is a lunchbox perennial. What we were going to measure here was increase in fruits and vegetables brought from home and decrease in sugar-sweetened beverages brought from home. Those were we were trying to influence other things, but these were the things we were going to measure. And we turned to what is a growing type of research tool, digital photography. And for those of you who have been engaged in research, it really is an exciting, I think, way to look at kids' diets. The beauty of it is that you can get in, get your data, and get out quickly. If you use this with a survey to write down any details that you can't capture in the photos, you can get a lot of information very quickly. And again, the idea here was that we would get the kids to unpack everything in their lunch boxes. We didn't touch the food. That would have been a no-no. take a picture, which the kids thought was really fascinating. You know, they all use various electronic forms to take picture, but the idea that they could see their lunch right there in a picture for some reason captivated them. It was a very fast and efficient process, and by taking two photos of every kid, we could, from two different angles, we could get all the details. Since there were no differences between the intervention, between the full intervention, the nutrition eco, and the nutrition only groups, between the nutrition only and the control groups, for further analysis, we combined those into one group and compared that to the nutrition eco intervention, which was what we were really looking at as whether it would be a powerful enough way to change behavior. And then compared the outcomes that I've already mentioned. So you're ready for the results. Okay. We randomized about 675 kids, and for all the reasons that you lose kids by moving, by being sick, et cetera, there were 582 in the final analysis, and they were from a total of 12 schools. The groups were generally quite similar, fortunately. There are two things I should point out. We had a higher Caucasian group than we had originally wanted, just simply because schools had to volunteer, and those are the schools that volunteered. And also, they were more highly educated. When I show you the results, in fact, there is a positive here that the effect was seen in a more educated group than one might expect. So, here's what we found. Fruit consumption went up by 15%. And what's important about this is that it wasn't that the kids who liked fruit bought more fruit. It was that more kids brought fruit. So we actually motivated more kids to go home, tell their parents to put fruit in my lunchbox, and they came to school with it packed. We didn't see changes in vegetables, and we didn't see... There was a change in vegetables, but the number of children who actually brought vegetables was so small that the difference wasn't significant. And I'll try to explain some of the reasons for that at the end if I have time. And there was no change in sugar-sweetened beverages, and we think we have some thoughts about that. Children in the nutrition eco intervention were 28% more likely to bring fruit from home. That is a big increase. And 69% more likely to bring vegetables. But again, I said the numbers were small. We didn't see an effect on sugar-sweetened beverages. So the real bottom line here is that fruit, pardon the terrible pun, hangs lowest. It's the easiest to change because kids are more likely to like fruit. Vegetables are harder to reach, and we think that the reasons for this are, if you think about what goes in a lunchbox, most kids aren't willing to eat cold leftover cauliflower. So the number of things that you could put in the lunchbox that are vegetables is really relatively more limited, especially if you're not interested in swamping them in ranch dressing. It's a bigger challenge, and we think that the target there really is in looking at what we can do with vegetables outside of school. The really good news is that it is possible to change behavior with a modest intervention dose. If you look at this model here, we did the curriculum, in fact, the editorial we, in fact, one person, Lindsay Peterson, wrote the curriculum. It had to go to the classroom teacher, who had to be willing to teach this curriculum during class time. The kids had to sit up and take notice and listen and respond to it, to carry the message home to their parents, who then had to do something in order for this change in fruit consumption to actually occur. So we think there is real power in communication if you get the communication to be something that kids really respond to. I've talked a little bit about why we didn't see more of an impact on vegetables. The reasons we think we didn't get an effect in sugar-sweetened beverages are multiple. One is, if you've looked at sugar-sweetened beverage packages, which you could not have seen because they're ubiquitous, they are everywhere. And the packaging is very attractive to the kids. And we, in fact, had kids, so many kids bringing them. One kid we had in the study had three sugar-sweetened beverage packets for snack only and more for lunch. So that's one of the problems. The other problem is that water was hard to measure. Water consumption was hard to measure because they could go out to the fountain and get water in most of these schools. The other thing, and there were social barriers. Parents were afraid that if they packed water instead of sugar-sweetened beverages, that the kids wouldn't drink the water and the kids would become dehydrated. Kids said they wanted to be like other kids, and so that was another reason for not taking water instead of sugar-sweetened beverages. And then the final reason was we think that the dose of intervention in the study for water was not strong enough. That, in other words, we paid a lot of attention to fruits and vegetables. There was one lesson devoted specifically to water, but we think we need to do more focus on water to get the kids' attention to water instead of sugar-sweetened beverages increased. We believe it can be done. We think it's a case of measurement error along with better dosages. So what are we doing next? Well, we're at the moment looking at, we've looked at sustainability. We just haven't yet analyzed the data. We have them and they're being analyzed now. So we're looking at kids in fifth grade. This study was done, I think I didn't mention, in third and fourth graders because they're a group that really are susceptible to this kind of communication. And we have those data. We also did, for the control group, we did a full delayed intervention. And we're analyzing those data, so we'll know whether our study was replicable, that it wasn't just a fluke that we got these good results. We do know, we did lots of process evaluation with this study, and we know that a lot went on in the classrooms, that it really turned the teachers and the kids on. They did compost bins, they collected and weighed and graphed their trash. They had great creative ideas for how to take the what was in the actual curriculum one step further. And so we're working with all of those ideas to take this to the next step in our hopefully next foray into the Great Taste, Less Waste campaign, and are looking to measure the campaign effects on overall intake. So we're really excited about that we can move the needle on fruit intake, a little bit on vegetables, and we can do more. So I'd like to thank my team, which was tireless and involved in its effort. One of my team members is sitting there quietly making sure, Aviva Must is sitting there making sure I don't make any mistakes, and one of her doctoral students, Christy Hubbard, who did the huge task of putting together the database for this. If you use digital photography, it is not a trivial task to analyze the data once you've got it. Getting the data is the easy part. I guess it's time now for questions. And so if anybody wants to see the curriculum, I have one copy with me, I have the materials with me, and I'm happy to answer specific questions.